You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Today, I will be covering the case of Mary Boyle, Ireland's youngest missing persons case. In Donegal, Ireland, on a remote farm in 1997, little Mary, a twin just 6 years old, would vanish walking back to her grandmother's home. Despite a frantic search by family, locals, and the Ballyshannon Garda Station, no trace of Mary has ever been discovered. Before I dive into this case, I wanted to explain that I got my information from a lot of sources. But the biggest chunk of information that I'll be referring to comes from the documentary of The Untold Story of Mary Boyle by Gemma O'Daughtry. The main reason that I will be discussing information from this documentary that was very controversial, in fact, was pulled off of YouTube due to lawsuits, however, was put back up due to those lawsuits being unfounded, is that this documentary works directly with Mary's sister, Anne, as well as her cousin, Margot, and investigators that were there from the very beginning. Again, this is not my only source, as I read and researched local papers and many other web sources. With this case being so massive and so much information out there, I followed the most consistent and will be sharing that in this episode. As always, I highly encourage my listeners to research these cases on their own and form their own opinions. However, when a family member is publicly speaking, I will always amplify their voices first, which I hope to do for Anne Jr. today, Mary's twin. There are two Anns in this case that are important: Anne Sr., Mom, and little Anne, which was her daughter. So I'll be referring to Mom as Anne Sr. and little Anne as little Anne. Not only is Mary's disappearance that March Ireland's youngest missing persons case, but it's also the longest unsolved case. Throughout the years, the family has become divided over their beliefs of what happened to little Mary on that day in 1977 and how to handle her disappearance publicly. At the root of it all, a little girl vanished, and she deserves justice, and her family, no matter how divided, deserves answers so they can begin to heal and move forward. Certain investigators and some family and friends believe that the main suspect, who they are confident had something to do with Mary's disappearance, is allegedly being guarded and protected by the Irish justice system. However, Mary's mother, Anne Sr., has been very vocal in stating that she has not liked how her daughter Anne, little Anne, and cousin Margot have gone about seeking justice for Mary and disagrees with their campaign efforts. Now that I've covered all of that, let's get back to Mary. Mary and little Anne were identical twins born June 14, 1970 in Birmingham, England. Her Irish parents, who had migrated from Donegal, had met at a dance and fell in love in Birmingham, where they started their family. Anne Sr. had grown up in the tiny town of Cashelard, and Charlie grew up on the tiny island of Owy. I'm sorry, Ireland, if I pronounce any of these wrong. I really looked up pronunciations and tried. My apologies. Charlie worked in a factory, and Anne Jr. was a bus conductor. They were married in 1967 and had Patrick first. Then 2 years later, Anne Sr. would give birth to the twins, little Anne and Mary. In 1972, Anne Sr. and Charlie would decide to move back to Donegal. Ann Sr. really wanted to move to America, but Charlie didn't want to be that far from family, so they settled on going back to Ireland. First, they tried to settle on Owie Island, but eventually they would return to the mainland. Little Ann and Mary were inseparable. Little Ann said that Mary was the bubbly one who loved to talk to everyone. Little Ann said that she was a very brave and vocal girl and not afraid of anyone. Little Ann said that her and Mary went everywhere and did everything together, and she can remember two arguments they ever had, and that's it. In one of those unforgettable arguments, little Ann remembers that her and Mary got into an argument in school and the headmistress had decided to tie their ponytails together to force them to be around one another until they got along as punishment for allowing their argument to disrupt the school. But instead, both girls just found this hilarious. Margot O'Donnell, one of Ireland's most famous country singers, is a distant cousin of Mary's. She describes the first time she saw the twin girls in Donegal and a very small community where they really do know everyone. Margot is related to Charlie, Mary and Little Ann's father, and she grew up and went to school on the island and knew all the families. Margot said the first time she met the little girls, she had seen them playing by a stream that ran down through the island, and she couldn't tell them apart. They were truly identical with their beautiful faces and blonde hair. She did say one difference is one of them was moving so much faster than the other, and the other one seemed to move more slow and cautiously. That would have been shortly before they moved to the island, to the mainland, where Margot now lived. The last time Margot remembers seeing the girls was at a regatta. That was held in the local harbor on the Midland. Margot's mother, until her death, would often tell people about the last time she saw Mary and Little Ann together, and she would point to the stone wall across the way and say, "That's the last place I saw them together." Margot says to this day, being that she knew Mary in person, and even though they were distantly related, she always could see the little human behind the headlines. A few days before Mary vanished, the Boyle family would leave their home on the west coast near Kingshlaw on St. Paddy's Day, 1977, to travel 2 hours to their grandparents' remote farm in Donegal, about 5 miles outside of Ballyshannon in Cashelard. These were Ann Sr.'s parents and her side of the family. They were there to attend an anniversary mass of a deceased loved one in a parish that Ann Sr. had grown up in. Little Ann remembers when they arrived to her grandparents' house. At first that night, she was not feeling good. She felt pretty sick and didn't think she was going to make it to mass the following morning. However, when she woke up the following day, she felt better, and she remembers all the hustle and bustle in the cottage as everyone was getting ready to leave for the morning service. After everyone was ready, they all headed to Cashelard to attend the mass as a family. After the service, the family would return to their grandparents' home where lunch was made and served. After lunch, they would all decide to attend a local fair and later that evening return to the family cottage for dinner. Mary and her family would spend the night at her grandparents' cottage. The tiny cottage that her grandparents owned was buzzing with family the day Mary disappeared. That day, the following day, there were 11 family members in total: the twins, their brother Patrick, their parents Ann Sr. and Charlie, Ann Sr.'s parents Lizzie and Patrick, Ann Sr.'s brother Jerry and his wife, and their two small boys, Jared and Gregory. After dinner that evening, little Ann asked her sister Mary to come out and play with her and her two cousins, Jared and Gregory. All four children had been playing when little Mary noticed her uncle with a ladder and decided to follow him to return that ladder to a neighbor's home. Jerry would tell investigators the day that Mary vanished, he had went to return the ladder he had borrowed earlier from the neighbor about 800 meters away or 0.5 miles. He said that he had noticed a loose tile on the roof and wanted to repair it, so that's why he had borrowed the ladder. He said that Mary had decided to join him on his walk to return the ladder through the fields marked by stone walls among the path. He told investigators that Mary would climb these stone walls all by herself without any help from him along the way. Jerry said that him and Mary came to a muddy patch on the way to the neighbors, and that's when Mary decided to turn back. He said he had decided to continue on to the neighbor's house and return back home about a half an hour later. That's when Mary's mother, Anne Sr., took notice that Mary wasn't around and nobody saw her, and they began to realize she was missing. The day Mary went missing, she was wearing a lilac jumper, brown trousers, and was wearing white and purple ribbon in her hair. She had been wearing Wellington boots, one size too big for her. That was the last time little Anne ever saw Mary. Anne Sr. would tell investigators that she had realized around 4:20 p.m. that Mary was missing. Anne Sr. said she had run out the cottage door and shouted to the other children and asked them, had they seen Mary? The children answered no, but Anne Sr. noticed Jerry standing silently at the wall repairing the stone outside of the house, and he remained silent, not telling Anne Sr. that Mary had followed him through the field. Jerry would then get up and walk away silently towards the direction of the neighbor's house. One of Anne Jr.'s statements from that day to investigators was, quote, "When I looked out and saw only four children, Jerry was there at the wall. Jerry didn't mention to me at any time that Mary was missing and didn't tell me that she was with him until he had the first search carried out," unquote. Martin Collins was the Ballyshannon sergeant at the time when Mary disappeared and one of the first senior officers at the scene when Mary was reported missing. When Sergeant Collins arrives on scene, he would be greeted outside of the house by Jerry, who told Collins the events that had transpired that evening and the timeline, but told the sergeant not to go into the house because the parents were just too upset at this time. Collins said when he arrived on scene that he was told by Anne Sr. that Jerry was repairing the stone wall and walked off to the neighbors, and when he came back the second time, that's when he would mention that Mary was with him earlier. Collins' alarm bells went off when discovering the length of time before the Garda was notified of Mary's disappearance. This, of course, would set off Collins' alarm bells when discovering the length of time before the Garda was notified in Mary's disappearance. Anne would tell Collins that she had realized just after 4 p.m. that Mary was missing and began searching for her, and they would wait until 6:30 p.m. after their search didn't produce Mary or any clues to call the Garda and report her missing. It was after Anne Sr. had traveled by foot searching for Mary to a local lake and came across two anglers who told her they had not seen Mary come through that area, and they told Anne Sr. she should contact the police. When Anne looked across the other side of the bank of the lake, she saw Jerry standing there and she shouted across the way, asking him to inform the police of Mary's disappearance. Jerry would shout back that she needed to do it. In the end, the fishermen were the ones who drove the 5 to 6 miles to Ballyshannon to report Mary missing. At this time, many homes didn't have landlines, so that's why the fishermen drove to the Garda station instead of calling. Sergeant Collins said that any missing child's case, 1 minute is crucial, and the fact that their department wasn't notified for 2.5 hours definitely made a massive impact on it not being solved today. Jerry would tell investigators that he was at the lake looking for Mary, that he drove Charlie's red Ford to the lake in hopes of finding Mary, then drove it straight back to the cottage. But Anne Sr. told investigators that Jerry had left the car on the side of the road and that she drove it home from the lake, stopping at a neighbor's home before returning to the cottage to see if they had seen Mary. There were other statements made by Jerry that didn't sit right with Collins. Collins found Jerry's statement that Mary was climbing the walls along the way all by herself with no help a bit strange of a statement, but also, in his opinion, not very plausible. Having children himself, he could not imagine his kids at 6 being able to navigate these 3 to 4 foot walls by themselves, as well as the fact that the tops of the stone walls are typically just stacked stone that would fall off with a simple push. That wouldn't hold a child or allow one to really climb up on them. Collins said Jerry emphasized that at no point along her walk had he helped her climb any of these 3 walls along the path. Margo would learn of Mary's disappearance while on tour. She would call home to confirm the rumor she heard and found out that, yes, it was little Mary that was missing. Margo, understandably upset, decided she would go home the next day to be with her mother. Margo and her mother decided that they would go in the morning to go see Charlie and help search for Mary. In the first days of the search, teams were formed, local searched, air corps used helicopters to search from the air, and hilltop swamps were pumped and drained to look for Mary the following morning when the sun was back up. By the time officers had arrived to begin the search, the sunlight was fading and already crucial hours were lost. So they called the local army in, which, armed with flashlights, continued the search for Mary on the mountain through the night. At this point, rain began falling, and there was a point in the night that it got so dark, especially with the rain pouring down, that the soldiers would have to set off flares into the sky for them to temporarily see and navigate the terrain around them. The same day that Mary went missing, there was a drum festival being held in Ballyshannon. And after the fishermen had informed the police Mary was missing, an announcement was made on the stage asking for volunteers to come join the search. So many people from the fair volunteered to join the search. There was by no means a lack of urgency between the army, officers, family, neighbors, friends, strangers. I mean, everyone was out looking for Mary. At that point, that night, there wasn't any indication in all these searchers' minds that something awful had happened. In their mind, they were desperately trying to search for a cold, wet, lost little girl who could be harmed, who could have hurt herself, but who indeed needed to be brought home. Despite the massive coordinated effort, they could not find a single trace of Mary, not her ribbon from her hair, not a boot, nothing pointed to Mary being anywhere. As they searched through the night into the morning, Mary's disappearance had found its way to the news and it was spreading across Ireland for people to be on the lookout for a little girl with blonde hair, blue eyes, purple ribbons in her hair, and a lilac sweater, brown boots. A week later, specialized divers were brought in to dive the lake beside her grandparents' home, the lake the men were fishing at when Anne Sr. came looking for Mary. At this point, after all the ground that was covered by the searches, they felt it was the last place they really needed to be thorough at, because nothing else made sense to them where Mary could be. This was not a very large lake, and it didn't have any streams running away from it. That told investigators that if Mary had drowned, her body would be found close to the shoreline. It's not a very large lake, deep, but not so large that a drowning victim would not be spotted. They also would drain this lake when the divers didn't find anything and even hired experts to dig up the mushy earth underneath the lake to make sure nothing was there. Every body of water within a reasonable walking distance had been thoroughly searched. Margot said it would be a few days after Mary vanished that her and her mother would arrive to the farm. When they came down the road that normally was quiet, it was filled with cars and people searching the areas around the cottage and the farm. Margot said that when her and her mother arrived, they weren't quite sure how to get down to the cottage, so they joined the search group and began searching for Mary. Despite Margot's mother and Margot being to this cottage before, it is important that people understand this is not like a normal road and that people just know how to get to this farm. These farms are super secluded and you usually need a family member, an owner of the farm, to take you to their home or their location because it's not clear, defined, marked roads. Margot remembers heading down the direction where they say Mary was last seen, and she said it was a bit eerie. She said as the family and neighbors began to go over the events that led up to Mary's disappearance and the days following, there seemed to be two stories being told about the events happening at the same time. Within the next few weeks of Mary's disappearance, the newspapers were already running stories that Mary must be deceased at this point, since so much of the area around her grandparents' cottage had been repeatedly searched and she was not found. While investigators were now running out of ideas, they decided to take little Anne, Mary's twin, and have her walk with one of the investigators the same route that Mary walked with her Uncle Jerry. What they didn't tell little Anne was that when they got to the spot where Jerry states that Mary turned around and walked home on her own accord, the officers looked at little Anne and told her he forgot something at the cottage and he needed her to go back and get it. Their thought was that since little Anne and Mary are identical twins and spent so much time together, that she probably thinks a lot like her. So they had officers in the bushes along the way to watch and keep track of little Anne to see where she went in hopes by some miracle she would possibly bring them to Mary. However, little Anne made it back to the cottage down the same path that they had just come from without any issues and not getting lost along the way. Little Anne and her brother Patrick would eventually be sent home to relatives to stay in Kingslar, while Anne Sr. and Charlie stayed in Cashelar to continue searching for Mary. But after 6 weeks with no new leads and no Mary, they had to make the hard decision to head back home to little Anne and Patrick, as they had done everything they felt they could do in that moment to search for Mary. In the few short days into Mary's disappearance, officers had honed in on a person of interest that had become very anxious and distressed around them. And these officers were concerned that this person of interest's behavior was something that they needed to start digging deeper into. That is, until allegedly a local politician would call the Ballyshannon Garda Station and demand that the department's now chief suspect not be arrested. This alleged politician had a close relationship not only with the suspect, but had a personal relationship with Superintendent Don Murray, who was in charge of Mary's disappearance and missing investigation. A lot of contradictory accounts from the investigation from day one, looking back, were connected to Don Murray, with the investigators never being able to clarify these inconsistencies over the years. It has led the family and locals to believe that they are involved in a cover-up of an innocent child's murder for 46 years. I bring this allegation up because as we move forward, you will see it has merit in Mary's case. In the years after Mary's disappearance, Anne Sr. and some local investigators would stick with the theory that Mary was abducted by a stranger. However, Mary's twin sister, little Anne, and some retired officers that were first on the scene don't agree. They believe Mary was murdered by someone who knew her. Mary's disappearance left her family shattered. Little Anne had to grow up without her twin, and that was said to be so hard on her. Little Anne began acting out, ended up pregnant at 17 with her first child she named Mary. However, it was very hard on her to be an unwed mother in a Catholic Ireland back then. And for little Anne, her life was really a struggle as she moved forward. Little Anne was frustrated with her mother, Anne Sr., for believing that she always knew something about Mary's disappearance and she would never admit it. Anne Sr. didn't like the way that little Anne went about advocating for her sister and demanding answers. Eventually, it would get to a point where Anne Sr. and little Anne stopped speaking altogether. Throughout the years, however, certain crime reporters, Mary's mother, and local news station RTE have continued to push the theory that Mary was abducted by a stranger. Many names have been dropped in this theory publicly to include a known sex offender and child serial killer, Robert Black. We'll dig deeper into that connection later. A Sligo man would also become a suspect and be arrested in connection with Mary's case in 2014, but released without charge. There were some that looked at travelers' communities as possible suspects, and the blame shifted on them for Mary's disappearance for a while. Mary's mother, Anne Sr., also put out many theories over the years, saying at first the family just thought that Mary had gone astray in the mountains and gotten lost on her way back home. But as the days wore on, she began to fear that somebody had taken Mary. In an interview with RTE, Mary and her brother Michael told reporters they thought that Mary likely left on her own accord that March day and headed from Cashelard on foot to Balik, which was about 7 kilometers or 4.35 miles away across the border into Northern Ireland. They based this theory on the fact that they said that Mary had seen a toy there at the market and she had liked it the previous day. Her mother thinks, in her opinion, Mary could have made it to the main road that would have taken her back to that toy shop. But there's nothing pointing to Mary being on that road or that anyone took her or didn't take her that day. Mary's disappearance happened during the Troubles in Ireland, so Donegal had a lot of security around. Detective Sergeant Aidan Murray of Ballyshannon, now retired, said they were in a very active area during Mary's disappearance due to the conflict happening. Collins also stated that at the time, border security was very heavy and that they had multiple checkpoints along the border, and the area couldn't have been heavier policed than it was back then. Yet nobody saw Mary, and only a few vehicles were seen on the road to Balik, and those were all neighbors of the community, of which there were not many. Colin said that he did inquire with the neighbors and the few vehicles spotted along the roadway, and they were confident they didn't have any information on Mary's whereabouts or her disappearance. Margot said she remembers in those first few days that the community and surrounding villages were involved in helping Mary from the beginning and even arranged for a small bus to shuttle search volunteers to and from the town cottage and farm to search. As searchers returned, they were greeted with a warm meal and new volunteers would board the bus for their shift. However, Margot said a few days in and searchers would return to town and say they were not going back. Margot would ask them and they would tell her it was because it was obvious what happened to that poor girl after being taken up there and they could not bear to go back. Several days after Mary's disappearance, a little over a week after Collins was leaving the Garda station in Ballyshannon, a man that knew Mary approached him outside of the station. Collins would let this gentleman know that he had a meeting he needed to attend in Beldorn, just down the road, and to please stay at the station in Ballyshannon. He would be back quickly and they could speak. Beldorn was just a few minutes down the road. Collins says as he was driving down the road halfway to Beldorn, he would see this man driving behind him. Collins would park but proceed to go into his meeting, and when he came out of the meeting, the man was sitting outside of the building in his car awaiting for Collins. Collins said he got into the man's car, and Collins said the man began sobbing. He told Collins he knew both girls and loved them and that he had children of the same age and how he was feeling about Mary's disappearance. Collins told the man that there were three possibilities that could have happened to Mary. 1, she was still out there. 2, she was kidnapped. Or 3, she was murdered. Collins looked at the man very bluntly and asked him, "Which of these three scenarios do you think most likely happened?" Collins said the man looked at him and said, "The last one." Collins wanted to make sure that he understood his answer, so he asked the man, "Do you mean murdered?" And he said, "Yes." While they won't release who this man is, they will say that he is related to the suspect. In the days after her disappearances, Detective Murray would interview this suspect. Murray and another officer asked the suspect to just tell them what happened to Mary that day. That's when the suspect would become very agitated, crying and yelling and telling the officers that they were accusing him of murder. Murray said at this point he got the familiar nudge under the table from the inspector signaling him to back down and lay off the suspect. Murray didn't want to, but he listened and offered to get the suspect a glass of water. Murray left to get the glass of water, and when he came back in, he said the suspect was back to his normal behavior and calm again. Murray said after the years of these interviews with suspects, you can see the truth in their eyes. And Murray knew with all his heart, looking into this man's eyes, he was guilty of hurting that little girl. Murray still believes if the inspector hadn't stopped his line of questioning, he could have pushed him a bit harder and he would have confessed. Murray said that based on his experience, he could tell he had the suspect on the defense, and that's usually where if you push just a little bit harder, the truth will come out. It would be shortly after this interaction with the suspect that the Ballyshannon station would receive the alleged phone call from the politician telling them none of the particular family were to be made suspects in Mary's disappearance. Murray says that he remembers after that phone call, it was made clear that certain people were not to be interviewed and all hands off the current suspect. It was made clear they needed to start looking somewhere else. In 2016, these allegations were put on the record of the European Parliament by Dublin MEP Lynn Boylan.
This is Mary Boyle, Ireland's longest missing child case. 6-year-old Mary disappeared in 1977, and the man whom her twin sister believes is responsible for her disappearance still lives in that community and has never been formally brought in for questioning. Allegedly, a still-sitting politician directly intervened, and that intervention led to one of the worst cases of police cover-up we have seen in Ireland. Almost 1 year ago, I brought Mary's twin sister Anne to this Parliament seeking justice. Article 2 of the Charter of Fundamental Rights guarantees the right to life. Six-year-old Mary was denied that right. Article 20 of the Charter guarantees the right to equality before the law. Mary was denied that right. To this day, there has been no inquest into Mary's death, no commission of investigation, despite a formal request from the legal team. In fact, it has never even been debated in the Irish Parliament, which is why I am forced to raise it here tonight. Six-year-old Mary Boyle has been failed by the Irish state.
Despite this public testimony to Parliament by Boland, they were ignored by Parliament and the mainstream media. To those looking in, it felt like an obvious choice of Parliament and the Irish media to turn a blind eye to Mary's case and this public statement of alleged corruption and cover-up in her case. This would be noticed by other media outlets, but particularly the British paper The Guardian, and they ran with the headline asking, quote, "Why has Ireland's mainstream media turned its back on Mary Boyle?" unquote. Margot believes that there was a senior officer at the time of Mary's disappearance who felt like he had to, quote, "play ball with this politician," unquote. She said she doesn't know what it was that made him think that he had to go along, maybe blackmail. But throughout the year, she said she's heard tales and rumors that make her skin crawl. It would be Mary's disappearance and how it was handled that made Margot come to the realization that in her eyes, Ireland has no real justice system. At the time of Mary's disappearance, Don Murray was the superintendent. Unfortunately, he passed away in 2014 and took his secrets, or his truth, to the grave with him. Before Don Murray's passing, throughout the years, he gave many conflicting accounts about Mary's case. In 2000, he did an interview with RTE where he would tell reporters that it was Jerry who told Mary as they were walking through the fields to go back to the cottage. But that directly conflicts with Jerry's statement of what happened. Jerry's statement to an officer in March 1997 was, quote, "I have no idea why she turned back, and I certainly did not tell her to go back," unquote. Don Murray would also say that Jerry and Mary had come across a pool of water that was 2 feet deep. However, that same day, the pool of water was seen by investigators and measured at only 6 inches deep. He goes on to contradict Jerry's statements even more in his 2000 interview with RTE.
"He wanted her to go home because it was a cold, miserable evening, and she stopped for a while and he went on, but then he looked again and she was still following him. And as he came in then up to a lane which leads from Macaulay's, he turned into the lane and went down through. And he came to a lock of water which was about 2 foot in depth. And he walked easily through it in his Wellingtons with the ladder. And when he got to the other side, he looked back and he saw Mary. Anyway, but when he looked back, he saw Mary at the edge of the water on the other side. And he said to her, 'Go on home. Didn't I tell you to go home?' or words to that effect. And Mary said, she says, 'I can't get across.' And he said, 'You go on home.' So he continued on. That was the last time he saw Mary."
In 1985, RTE would do a documentary about Don Murray and the corruption accused by his officers. One in particular, who had since passed, stating that Don Murray had a list of untouchables that officers could not approach. They were above the law. This 17-page letter that this officer wrote contained lots of allegations, along with other allegations against officers in a quote-unquote no-pal act that seemed to be operating in the district with other complicit officers. This letter would point to the concerns and frustration among officers how the guard was handling complaints. It also outlined alleged relationships Don Murray had with some members of the Fianna Fáil, and even alleged that in 1979, Don Murray had attended a Fianna Fáil convention in Castlebar. For those like me who don't know what the Fianna Fáil is, from my understanding, it's the Republican Party of Ireland. But again, if you know what it is and how to better describe it, please educate me. This is the big deal, that a superintendent would be spotted at a Fianna Fáil convention and had a relationship with a member of the Fianna Fáil, because no superintendent in Ireland, along with an officer, are allowed to identify themselves publicly or actively with political parties. In the earlier 90s, as Colin's retirement from the force was approaching, he really wanted to get a chance to speak to the suspect. A psychic had come to the area and was interested in helping with Mary's case and had visited the cottage, but had left in a state of distress. The psychic would contact Collins at the guard station, asking to use the guard station as a place to speak with the suspect, and Collins saw this as his chance to also speak with the suspect. When the suspect did arrive at the station to meet with the psychic, and when he arrived, Collins decided to seize that moment and take the suspect to a room to question him, telling him that he was not under arrest and that he was free to go at any time he wished, but that he'd like to ask him some questions. Collins asked him a few questions, and then he asked the suspect the same thing he asked that gentleman in a car that had followed him to his meeting. He said he had three scenarios of what happened that day. He tells the suspect either one, Mary was still lost out there somewhere, two, that she was abducted, or three, Mary had been murdered. Collins said the suspect gave no response, nothing, as Collins decided to rehash all the events again, going over the timeline and statements from that day. Again, the man just sat silently with no reaction. Collins said the suspect would neither admit or deny involvement in Mary's disappearance. Collins did feel for a moment he was going to get a confession, but he said the conversation stalled, and that's when he knew he wasn't going to get the answer he was looking for that day. The suspect would leave that day and never be arrested. Sergeant Aiden Murray would say that the suspect was never arrested, and any interaction that they had with him, he was invited to the station as a witness, never listed or called a suspect. Sergeant Murray and Collins have both publicly said they were not made aware of a call from a politician telling them to back off. Family members known to Mary in the community have told the guard station the identity of Mary's killer, and yet nothing could be done with that information, and that suspect has never been arrested. Little Anne said as she's grown up, she was told about this same person on multiple occasions, and that they were the one who killed her sister Mary. Margot herself says the same person told her in 1984 and 1990 what happened to Mary and who is responsible, and their story was the same years later, with a little more detail added to it the second time. Margot said that she had already had her suspicions in 77, just like everyone else had, and it just confirmed it. Little Anne now believes that Mary was killed to keep a secret. She believes the secret was that Mary was sexually assaulted and she was going to tell. Margot agrees, saying that Mary was a chatty little girl and she too believed she was assaulted and told that person she was going to tell, so they killed her. Detective Collins and Sergeant Murray, looking back at the case, can agree with this theory, saying they don't understand how anyone could commit such acts on a child and walk around like that. Murray and Collins reported their concerns many times over the year about this suspect being a danger to others, but those concerns have fallen on deaf ears as the suspect remains free. Collins said that if the suspect did what he thinks they did to Mary, then he certainly would be a danger to other people in the community. Margot said growing up that she respected the color and the uniform, but her respect for the uniform is now gone after the way that Mary's case was handled by their justice system. Margot said despite her years of pleas, she knew she was talking to deaf ears as they did nothing to help her solve Mary's case. Margot has taken it upon herself to continue the fight and the search for Mary. She has arranged searches and digs for Mary. In 2011, Margot would reach out again to Little Anne, who felt like she was never included in any of these searches throughout the years for her sister. Margot said she realized that Little Anne was in an awful place dealing with her sister's disappearance, and Margot asked her if she wanted to come join her on this search for Mary, and Little Anne said, of course she did. Margot asked, how much do you want Mary found? And Little Anne responded, more than anything else in the world. Margot said that conversation took place on a Monday, and she was asking Little Anne to be there by Wednesday in Cachelard, and she said she could do it. Margot went to the guard station to ask for maps of the area that Mary disappeared in so she could better coordinate their search, and a lady at the guard station told her she could have them, but as the days went on, Margot didn't hear back from this lady, so she called the station and a man answered. Margot told him she was looking to get a copy of the maps for the Mary Boyle case. And the man said that the case has been too long ago, they don't have any of that, and he told her that the case was just done and over with. In 2014, two officers would show up on Mary's sister, Little Ann's doorstep with no notice. Little Ann lives out in the middle of nowhere, and she said they just appeared on her doorstep, letting her know that they were in the area. She said she was positive one officer had traveled all the way from Donegal, and they were there to push a new suspect on her and try to steer her away from the original suspect. Little Ann said she felt very intimidated. They told her that their suspect was Brian McMahon, 63, from a neighboring county of Sligo. It would be 37 years later that the guard made an official arrest in Mary's case and publicly announced and acknowledged it. However, those in Sligo who knew McMahon said they didn't believe he had anything to do with Mary's case. A warrant would be obtained to allow the guard to question McMahon, who was a current inmate. They attempted to tie Mary to his current charge of indecent assault in 2013 related to cases in his earlier years. At this time, he was stationed at a military camp outside of Ballyshannon, the same time Mary went missing, and the same time these indecent assaults took place. So at the time that Mary goes missing, McMahon is stationed in a military camp outside of Ballyshannon, and also these indecent assaults that he's causing are taking place in this same time frame. These indecent assaults that are now been proven and he is currently serving time for. So this is where they try to bring in this connection. However, when McMahon is brought in for questioning about Mary's case, they tell him they believe it's him that went and abducted Mary, despite knowing that he had no vehicle and that it would be over 6 miles to Mary's farm. And he would have to walk away with her 6 miles from the farm. McMahon also insists that he was on the military camp that day and that there was no way he could have walked away. McMahon said that he was actually shocked that they were standing there questioning him about this little girl's case. He said the following night, after he was brought into the station for questioning, he was taken into an unmarked police car and driven around so the press could get a clear shot of him, which would show him in the papers the next morning, labeled as the suspect in Mary Boyle's case. McMahon said that honestly, he didn't even believe the officers interrogating him about Mary's disappearance believed he had anything to do with it. In 2015, the DPP decided no charges would be brought against McMahon and charges of pedophilia in relation to Mary's case. After McMahon's release in 2020, he said he was still considering legal action against the state and the guard for an illegal arrest. Sergeant Collins said in 2014, when he heard of McMahon's arrest, he was shocked because in 40 years in this investigation into Mary's case, McMahon's name never came up in their investigation. Collins also said that he believed it was impossible that McMahon had anything to do with Mary's murder. There's a writer, Barry Cummings, who wrote a book called Missing in 2003, and he covers a huge section of Mary Boyle. And in this book, he points to Robert Black, a Scottish sex offender and child killer, as the most likely suspect in Mary's disappearance. In his book, he even states that it's in his opinion and of the guard police in the north that Robert Black was in Ireland in early 1977 and was most likely in the north the day that Mary Boyle disappeared, 4 or 5 miles from the border. In this book, he continues with the narrative that Mary walks on her own accord from her uncle, and instead of going back to the cottage at her grandparents' house, she travels to the border to go get this toy that she had seen at the market and is picked up by Robert Black along the way. In 2008, a Belfast company decided to do a documentary on the Mary Boyle case, and they would use Cummings as a contributor. The main contributor to the documentary and Cummings again would repeat the theory that Robert Black had abducted Mary off the roadway close to the border, despite Mary's family's insistence that this is not a theory that they believed had weight in it. Yet, this author became the voice for Mary for a nation in a documentary that had nothing to do with her family and what they believe happened to Mary. In 2016, Cummings would go on to the radio show Morning Ireland and again publicly link Robert Black to Mary's disappearance, despite Margot and little Anne verbally coming out against it again and again, saying that they don't believe he has anything to do with it. Of course, through this whole interview, he doesn't happen to mention that the family doesn't believe, nor do investigators believe, that Robert Black was involved in the abduction of Mary. Again, this man who did not work with the family would not relay what was going on in reality with the family and their beliefs, somehow became Mary's voice to the public. Sergeant Collins has made public statements. He was one of the original investigators, and he has said very plainly, very bluntly, that he does not believe that Robert Black had anything to do with Mary's disappearance. Collins says there's no evidence pointing to Robert Black being in the Ballyshannon area or the Cashelard area in the days that Mary was abducted. He said it would have been a 1 in a million chance that he would have had to been in that area at the right time to abduct Mary. Collins really wants people outside of the case to understand that they had a 40-minute window in an isolated countryside where no one has even realized this child is missing. A countryside that has so little residents that anything outside of normal traffic, normal people, would have been noticed and talked about. There would have been a witness that would have seen at least an unknown vehicle to the area going down the main road, and not a single neighbor or person has come forward to make that statement. Collins doesn't believe that Robert Black could have been in that particular area at that exact time without somebody seeing him and somebody saying something. We have to remember, when we're trying to picture how secluded this place is, that Margot, whose mother was from that area, grew up in that area, had been to that cottage, could not figure out how to get to the farm without family direction because it was so isolated and impossible to find without family members leading you back to the farm. Both Margot and her mother ended up taking the shuttle bus from the farm when they first arrived to help in Mary's search, with the rest of the volunteers, because that shuttle bus now knew how to get out to the farm, because they had been led out there by officers. So why would Robert Black be out there? Collins says he cringes every time he hears Robert Black's name being linked to Mary's case by journalists, because he knows it's just so remote for him to specifically be in that area. It just makes no sense to keep attaching him to the case. Collins also says he doesn't believe that it's possible that Mary fell into a lake, a swamp, a swirly pit, any body of water. He just doesn't see Mary being lost in a body of water as possible in her disappearance. Collins says he has faith in this because they checked every body of water. And if you remember earlier, when I go and talk about the first few days of the search, they got Air Patrol to search as well while draining the bodies of water looking for Mary. They also had divers go back into these bodies of water multiple times. In the very first few days that she disappeared, they checked every single body of water they could possibly think that this child could walk to within 40 minutes of no one knowing she was missing, and they ruled every single body of water out. In 2015, moving forward, Margot and little Anne tried to get the guard to work with them on Mary's case, but they are told that they are not allowed to work with them because the twins' mother, Anne Sr., is the next of kin and they're already working with her on the case. Margot and little Anne then decide to fight to get the case removed from Ballyshannon Guard and taken to the largest station, Pierce Street, in the heart of Dublin. Margot said at that point she had worked with so many men on searches and they had dug up so much land looking for Mary, but it didn't get them any closer. Margot said she was exhausted. She spent so many years organizing searches, doing digs, investigating this case by herself, and making sure to push Mary's story forward. And now she's just exhausted and needs help. That's when Margot and little Anne decided Pierce Street Station was the next step. The two would get together and go to Pierce Street to tell their story. As hopeful as little Anne and Margot were going into Pierce Street, that there is going to be some movement in this case and that the suspect would be arrested, nothing has happened. Margot said that her and little Anne sat down and spoke with a man who said at the Pierce station that he promised the story would not fall on deaf ears, and yet it seems it has once again. Margot and little Anne knew at that point their voice wasn't going to be heard locally, so they decided to take it internationally. They joined a Facebook group of other bereaved Irish families that weren't getting justice. Little Anne and Margot have traveled to North Ireland, Brussels, Westminster, and even on our side of the pond in D.C., where they spoke about and highlighted the injustices in Mary's case. The Taoiseach, newly elected in 2011, Ireland's leader, was from Donegal and had strong family connections to the area, and Margot knew of those that knew of him. Margot said she knew of him and decided to phone him and reach out and ask him for help with Mary's case. Her theory was, he's the chief and the head of Ireland, he has to be able to help her do something. Margot managed to get his number from a friend, and she called him and told him about Mary's case, and he told her to talk to the Minister of Justice, and she told him she didn't want to do that. She wanted him to help her find out what happened to Mary and bring her body home. Margot said despite her plea, he did nothing. In 2016, Mary Lou McDonald TD asked the Taoiseach Kinney if he had asked about Mary's case and stated he was aware of her case and had reached out to the guard and had not heard anything back, but didn't follow up. McDonald TD asked Kennedy if he was willing to meet with Little Anne about her sister's case and hear about the concerns of the guard handling Mary's case. In 2016, Margot and Little Anne requested that a new search be done at the Cashelard area because they do believe that Mary's remains are very close to the cottage, but that request was denied. Little Anne now is a mother of five, left Donegal, and lives in the Midlands with her husband Shane and doesn't have a great relationship with her mother, Anne Sr. She said that her mother was and is always trying to compromise her campaign for her justice for Mary. Anne Sr. has even gone as far as trying to seek legal action to stop Little Anne and Margot's campaign for justice. Anne Sr. has even gone on air to local radio stations mocking her daughter's search for her sister and her campaign for justice.
You know, things can be done quietly, not publicly, and running to Dáil's and running to Westminster and all this carry on. That's the most ridiculous carry on I ever seen in my life.
Little Anne has been fighting to renew the interest and get an inquest into Mary's case. In December 2015, she met with the Donegal coroner, asking him to please consider an inquest in her sister's case. However, Anne Sr. has publicly stated that she does not want an inquest and that she says she will leave it in her will, the request that there is never an inquest into her daughter Mary's case. This is contradictory to statements of all of Anne Sr.'s previous statements about her daughter Mary's case from the beginning, stating that all she wanted to do was find out what happened to her daughter before she dies. And now it seems like she's purposely putting up roadblocks to anybody finding out what happened to Mary that day. All the way up until 2007, there are interview after interview with Mary's mom, feeling that her daughter is dead, and they want to find her and bring her home and have some answers to at least be able to lay her to rest. A lot of information, the allegations of corruption and political involvement in Mary's case come from this controversial documentary by Gemma O'Daughtry. When this documentary was first released, it was taken down and Ireland threatened a lawsuit against Gemma. But as you can see throughout this episode, they weren't the only ones that made these statements and had these concerns in Mary's case, so they had to put the documentary back up. And a political figure who I won't name, which the documentary itself never named, actually came out to say that he had nothing to do with this documentary, was alluding to, despite the documentary never pointing to him or giving any clues who he was, he still felt like he had to make a public statement saying it wasn't him. This man that used his alleged political power to stop the suspect from allegedly being arrested or pursued passed away in 2015. This particular politician coming out saying, "Don't look at me, it wasn't me, I haven't done anything," really fueled the flames to Gemma's documentary, and I typically don't cover controversial documentaries, but this documentary was done with family members who felt like their voices were intentionally being stifled. Margot and Little Anne are the ones that have pushed so hard to keep Mary's case in the public. They are the ones that have pushed for and paid for their own searches while traveling the globe trying to keep Mary's name alive and desperately pleading for assistance in helping solve Mary's case. Moving forward, little Anne is awaiting an inquiry for Mary, but that would require the next of kin, Anne Sr., to allow Mary to be declared deceased. Yet, despite Anne Sr.'s publicly stating since the 18-year mark of Mary's disappearance that she could be deceased, that she is deceased, as of 2016, she no longer wanted to let go of hope that Mary could be alive, stopping little Anne's hopes for an inquiry. It's January in 2023. Jerry Gallagher, the last person to see Mary alive, passed away. There are many things that were said after his passing, and I will be providing the links to those articles and sources for those interested that want to take a deeper dive. Margot would tell the Irish Independent how she learned about Jerry's passing and how she felt about it, saying, quote, "I got the news from Mary's twin he had passed away. It's sad. It just brings everything back. It has been a terrible, terrible story. I knew Mary Boyle. I was privileged to know her. She was a beautiful, lovely, wee girl. I don't want anyone to serve a day for Mary's disappearance or her death. But I just want her to have a decent burial and a proper resting place rather than lying up there in the mountain somewhere." Quote. I was able to get a hold of a family member that runs the Justice for Mary Boyle Facebook page, which, as always, I will link in the show notes. And they did inform me that at this present time, the most accurate documentary on Mary's case is currently The Untold Story of Mary Boyle. While they are no longer working with the original documentarian, it is right now the closest truth available in their eyes when it comes to a documentary covering Mary's case. They have provided me with some links to other podcasts that have worked with the family, one from the BBC that they would recommend, as well as YouTube links to the Sunday World newspaper coverage on Mary's case. Please be sure to visit those links for the most accurate information, and please stop by the Justice for Mary Boyle page and show them some love and support. At this moment, I do want to apologize to Ireland for anything that I mispronounced or didn't quite understand. I know there's the Guardia, and I think my mind thought that the officers were of the guard or from the guard. So if I've gotten any of that wrong, again, I am all about being educated on the proper terms. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. My hope is that little Anne and Margot can finally bring Mary home to rest and that her family can come together over the search for her. It's something I've touched on before, and I think a lot of families and creators also acknowledge, is how much a family goes through when they have a missing or murdered loved one. It's not just Mary's life that changed that day in 1977. Her whole family has been affected for 46 years. Loved ones have passed with no answers, family have become divided, secrets seem to become bigger than life itself, and still, their loved one has no justice. I'll be posting a link to Gemma's documentary, and I highly recommend watching it yourself. If you are listening on Apple or Spotify, please hit that subscribe and like button. If you have time, please leave a review. That helps cases like these reach more ears. Don't forget, when you see those missing and murdered posts on social media, to hit like, share, and retweet. Every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.